everyone, and welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin. It's a podcast dedicated to looking at why things don't work on stage sometimes. Why didn't they laugh? It's a powerful question. Why didn't they cry? Would be a question for dramatists. I wonder if there's dramatic actors that are like, why didn't they cry? I really want to make them cry because I'm a dick. I'm going to read a couple emails. I get a lot of great emails from listeners. I'm starting to take a little pride in the fact that my listeners are smart, and they like, I don't even know what smart means, but they like, they enjoy learning things and passing information. So I thought I'd read a couple. This is from Mark. Hello, brother. I'm a new fan of your comedy. Been having a ball these last few months, binging on your podcasts and YouTube videos. Just wanted to drop you an email, show some appreciation. He actually spelled appreciation, but I like saying appreciate. You make me laugh and then think about concepts I would never have considered before, which is awesome. Also wanted to show you something I stumbled across. It's really cool. It's a tribe civilization called the Mosuo, M-O-S-U-O. They're from rural China. And in this community, grandmother is king. Males have little to zero parental responsibilities to their own offspring. Everyone stays in the family home until death, so no kids are left behind. They have walking marriages. Women ultimately rule society. Men are just cock boys who work the fields. They don't have words for husband and wife. It's more exchangeable fuck buddies. I found it hilarious, and it reminded me of your bonobo chimps bit. They also don't have words for war, murder, or rape. It's full bellies, empty balls, and action. If this interests you, they are worth checking out, and I'm sure there's a workable bit in there for you. Anyways, keep up the good work. I'll go talk up WDTL in the iTunes reviews. Your man in Scotland, Mark. Thanks, buddy. See, I love info like that because I do think that. I think that the more female-led cultures, the less war. But the only thing is, before you get too excited, feminists, I will give you all the power you want as long as you know what that means. A lot of fucking. Got to drain the balls because men are incapable of anger when their balls are empty and their bellies are full. And then they'll work your fields and be your cock boys. This is a great, I love this dude. His name's Emil Guillermo. Emil? Hang on, he gave me a better pronunciation. It is Emil Guillermo. Because he's Filipino. Guillermo is Hispanic. The double L is pronounced differently for Filipinos. Okay, his first email was, Dear Owen, I'm writing to let you know I will be at your Redwood Shores show to experience firsthand in person the evolution of your Filipino nurse joke in order to assess if, in fact, said joke has reached the level of appropriate laugh-worthiness to which you claim. So I hope you include it in your set. I'm a U.S.-based Filipino-American columnist, one of the biggest daily newspapers in Manila with a global following, the majority of which are in the Bay Area. I also caution you that I happen to be 5'6", so I'm 1 inch taller than your worst Manila nightmare. Don't worry, I've been banned international from using all dining utensils. I happen to be an avid Why Don't They Laugh listener, but only since I stumbled on that insightful Google episode you did a few weeks back. One thing's led to another. As a podcast listener, I've come to appreciate your thoughtfulness and your new awareness of life, family, Saranac Lake, spiritual bankruptcy of Hollywood. But there is one thing that bothers me about some of your thoughts and politics and comedy lately. I agree one should bash all, somewhat equally. But I don't think it's necessarily true. The jester is always the jester, picking every oversized balloon he sees. To say you're just the jester is a cop-out. Sometimes the jester is truly heroic, but he makes it look spontaneous and coincidental when it was always intentional. In other words, it's no accident. The jester's garb is just a humble cover for the subversive act, but the king pays him for jocularity, not political advice, and doesn't know the difference. Okay, this is when I disagree. And I really like this guy a lot. I got to hang with him at the there's another email I'm going to be reading. I did this show. It was in the Bay Area, and I got to hang out with this guy, and he is a sweetheart. He went to Harvard. He's a brilliant man. He's understands comedy. When I read the next email, you'll get how just dialed in he is. but I don't see the jester as a subversive agent. And Emile agrees with Malcolm Gladwell, and I disagree with Malcolm Gladwell. And for those of you that listen to my podcast, Gladwell's my guy. I think he's a genius. But his last episode, The Satire Paradox, bothered me. Not on a deep emotional level. I'd still be his friend. I still respect him. But I disagree with how both of these guys see comedy. Gladwell was kind of taking shots at Tina Fey for doing the Sarah Palin impression, and how that satire ended up helping Sarah Palin because she got on SNL and made her more likable and palatable for a lot of liberals. And it showed, you know, Tina talking about how she would just make her R's funny and talk funny, like, hey, how are ya? You know, Sarah Palin, like the error. And I could tell that Gladwell was like, you had such an opportunity to take down this evil woman and you didn't. And I'm like, comedians aren't politicians. The minute you have a side, you're not a comedian. You're a pundit. And I'm not. I mean, I'll have opinions, but there's no room for that for me. And I could be wrong, or no one could be right or wrong. Maybe this is a disagreement in words, but I don't think that the comedian's job is a subversive agent. I don't think that we're supposed to have an end game. I think we're more comparable to the Joker and Batman. And I think that's why Trump is such an anomaly to people, because he's like that as well. He doesn't seem to have a goal. And it drives people crazy, because it's like when someone's already rich and they're already a little kooky, they're kind of just like they get a rise out of just, remember the Joker when he's like, I don't care about money. I like gunpowder and dynamite and gasoline. These things are cheap. You know, that's how comedians are. You know, I was always like that. I'm like, I don't care about politics. I like vodka shots and late nights at the Improv. I like high-fiving till my fucking hand bleeds. Do you know how I got these scars? Nick Swartzen pushed me down a hill when we were blacked out. That's how I am. And I just don't think there's a lot of room in comedy for that, because I think you get Lena Dunham when you do that. When you have a political agent, when you have someone who's been given a comedy career, not for her beauty or her talent, or the fact that she's likable, all the things that should make you a star, she's the opposite. She's intolerable to listen to. She has a ton of opinions. She's mean. She's not funny. She's not beautiful. She's unhealthy looking. And she is in your face all the time, because there's, ever since 2010, Citizens United, Super PAC, politics have now entered comedy, ladies and gentlemen. Ever since money can now count as votes, as democracy, how much money you have is a political move. Ever since 2010, more and more we are going to see comedians and entertainers that are propped up by political money. And they have a job to do, and that's to sway the minds of the masses. And that's her, you know? And that's why people despise her, because deep down inside, everyone knows that. And I'm not linking Amy Schumer with that. I like Amy Schumer, and she's very funny. She's a crusher, and I've known her for 10 years. I did a tweet the other day about Lena Dunham, and people were retweeting it and agreeing. And I noticed people kept linking Amy Schumer with her, where it's like, oh, yeah, her and Amy Schumer. And I'm like, dude, I've seen Amy Schumer crush, like, open mics to theaters to everything, and she's a very nice person. So that's not... I'm not linking all... You can be political and a comedian, but when you're blatantly not supposed to be famous, like Amy Schumer is supposed to be famous. She is attractive and relatable and funny, but like when there's a Lena Dunham, or I'm not going to... There's a few of them where you look at them and you're like, who made you? Like someone, some sorcerer made this person. Okay, so anyway, and they end up miserable. That's the problem. It's the thieves' dilemma. When you're made and you know that you're talentless, you start developing the biggest ego of everyone, because it's scar tissue. And then they're miserable and they become even fatter and sadder. So it's not something to envy. Okay, so I do the show, and it's at a restaurant in Silicon Valley. My friend Lori asked me to do it, and I'm always down to do stuff for her. She got me into Throckmorton Theater, which is incredible, and so she's like, it's not a big money gig, but it's at a very beautiful resort. The people are cool. You down? You're already on the West Coast. I'm like, hell yeah. So I do it. And this is why I respect Emil so much, is because listen to how he breaks it down. And he's 100% right. About last night, I thought you were quite funny, and yes, I did laugh, but let me explain why I laughed. Comedy club funny and expensive lifestyle gym restaurant funny are two different things. At the Bay Club restaurant, ceilings were too high in such a big space. Maybe that's so they can play volleyball in there if they choose. But the ceiling was a challenge for huge pianist in word mode. That was a room for a big organ. Yeah, this dude's legit funny. The room meant people weren't bunched together tight enough for laughter to bounce and explode. It was not a hell gig. It was more like suburban, not quite corporate, not quite comedy club gig. Almost like a private party gig. I did notice you sizing us up from the beginning, and when you declared us a smiley crowd from the start, admittedly, it made me want to laugh harder, just to prove to you I was more than just a Filipino smile. Filipino smile. Unfortunately, I was just drinking Coors Light, so you got kind of that laugh instead of the hearty craft beer laugh. You also wisely chose to buy shots for the big burly fellow, stage left, and his Dutch prostitute union leader pal, Benedictus. They served you well. Real quick side note, turned out that guy owned it. He owns all of the Bay Clubs. And the hardest laugher in the room, and I just latched onto him early. And Benedictus is this Dutch guy. And I kept saying that he's selfless. You know, it's not Benedict I, it's Benedict us. So that's who he's referring to. Anyway, it was a white crowd after all, and they were louder than my wife and I could be. But you keyed in on me. Normally I tend to be a PC cop. I bristled at the Filipino dog joke in Anchorman 2, but I think your race humor is a cut above lame morning DJ accent joke levels. So I understand and sensed your trepidation from the start. I think it resulted in you pulling back just a tad from being your Mad King self. You said it. You've been spoiled by comedy clubs, the demo, the crowd, but that's not the real world of glamour gyms in the high-tech Silicon Valley. I know that crowd because I'm a native who has reported extensively on the Bay Area. We're gentlefolk. Def Comedy Jam is in our past. The show is over at 9, remember, but you're a master at performance. You know how to play them all. It's just being able to make it all look spontaneous. Bring your truth to the audience. I think what you are experiencing is what many people of color have had to experience these years when they go in and out of different contexts and communities. This gets very interesting right here. I can't tell you how many times I've been the only Filipino in the room and then gone to an all-Filipino room where my wife was the only white. Playing a different audience, diverse audience, almost forces performers to be different people. What does that do to the truth? It shouldn't make a difference. But all the PC stuff we've talked about in a previous email makes everything more complicated than ever as we try to communicate our humor and concern. To some, it will always seem aggressive, even mean-spirited. But even the best of that has a humanitarian motivation to make us all better somehow. If it's just for laughs, well, I don't buy that. Freud didn't. Anyways, I think in Why Didn't They Laugh terms, comics should sometimes reassess the debilitating pace of a kill-em-at-all-cost style of comedy that's set to a metronome rate of 12 to 18 seconds a minute. I don't mean you have to go alt on folks, and you're not given a damn TED talk, but different audiences will appreciate thoughtfulness and a slower pace. When I'm not writing, I perform Spalding Gray-type personal monologues, mostly about, surprise, my race and ethnicity. On stage, I feel free to avoid the laughs. I let them find me. But recently, I've done some open mics to experience the pace of a more laugh-oriented show. Sadly, I found myself resorting to dick jokes. Moby dick jokes, but still. So my appreciation grows for headliners like you and your secret weapon, that amplified keyboard. That's like carrying a warhead. Goddamn right it is. I know when performing, the comic has a lot of tasks. You're selling drinks for the club, good times for the customers, but at the base is your truth. Last night was challenging. But I think the crowd genuinely liked you. And likability is always more important, though not always so audible. One last thing I like about you is leaving for family for Saranac Lake and the whole sustainable artistry thing. It's a common expression Now, for people to say they're seeking their tribe, you'll find it among others who believe in that independent spirit. You rejected what some people yearn for to start a vision of success on your own. That reminds me of my situation when I graduated from Harvard, but refused to become a Harvard man. Some might say I've been paying all my life for that quote unquote mistake, but I've carved out my own unique way, but no one else can say they've lived. And I'm not done yet. It's great to meet you in person. See you in podcast land. That's awesome. See, that's why I love these people, because we can disagree on something. And I look up to this guy in a lot of ways. He sought his truth. He lives his truth. He understands comedy. He doesn't have an axe to grind. He'll give me props when he feels I deserve them. And he'll tell me when he feels I'm wrong. And I love that. And I do just disagree. I don't feel that comedy has an agenda, but I do completely agree with his take on laughs. Like, I watched my father teach last week, and I have it on tape. Next week maybe I'll play it for you guys. I got to go through all of it. It was a crazy week. I did 6 shows in Syracuse. This week I'm in, where am I? Plano, Texas, then Orlando Improv, then Dallas, Texas, and then Cleveland. So I got a lot on my plate. Hugepianist.com for tickets. But to watch my dad get laughs in his class, he teaches rhetoric, speech communication, but also just talk. And I'll never be one of those guys that's like, oh, I don't need laughs. Yes, I do. As he said, I'm moving drinks. But it's almost like when women are around a guy that doesn't force them to have, like, they're not pushy with sex. It makes the woman feel more at ease with possibly having sex with the guy. Like, if a guy clearly doesn't have an agenda to have sex with a girl, that's the best way to have a girl want to have sex with you. It's the same with crowds. If you're like, I'm here, I'm vulnerable. Kirk Fox talked about that on my last podcast. He was like, I'm here, I'm vulnerable. I'm going to do my thing. Hopefully you enjoy it. When you just have that attitude with the audience, they can then relax and just do it. But for this show, I really did have to just swing. And the crowd was too rich and white for me to even get to most of my racial stuff, because I don't think they're offended. I have a new take on this. I just don't think they care. I think being working class or middle class, or even some parts of upper middle class, if you're in the military or in entertainment, you're around so many different cultures and races and genders that becomes a major part of your comedy, because like interacting with cultures is your whole life. But I think there's an elite level of people, or not even elite, some are elite, some are just, I consider boring, you know, the suburban, everyone looks and acts the same people. They don't know what I'm talking about. Like, if I'm doing a joke about Filipino nurses, they've never met one. So it doesn't make sense to them. And I get that. And then they sometimes act like they're offended, but really they're only offended because they have no idea what I'm talking about. So anyway, I just wanted to read that for you guys. And I'm going to close the show here with a section from my new podcast called Case Closed, Beers Open. I'm doing with my brother. I took the interview with Kirk last week. For those of you guys that listen, last week Kirk was on the show and I cut up Kirk and I made it a conversation and I made him a character in our world. My brother in real life, we solve these quote unquote cases in small town Saranac Lake, and we get paid in beers. That's why it's called Case Closed, Beers Open. And I do all the audio engineering and make all these sounds and stuff. And we just finished a new one. So subscribe to that if you can. Listen, share it. It's doing really well on iTunes. So I'll say bye to you guys now, I guess, because I'm going to play you guys what... This is why I never trust... Listen, I trust cops that I know, but like the whole legal world, your words can be so manipulated. Don't trust quotes of politicians. Just don't trust anything that you don't experience yourself. Go back and listen to Kirk's interview with me, and then listen to what I made him a serial killer. Watch. I took these conversations that I made, or that we had, and I transformed him into a serial killer. And I sent it to him. He was dying. He was like, yeah, fuck yeah, man, use that shit. But he's like, I think the cops may actually come over and dig up my yard now. So check this out. Spread the word. Always email me, whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. Share this podcast because this is some underground shit, yo. This isn't corporate backed. I don't got that Citizens United money, bitch. I need you to help me, motherfucker shit. So check out Case Closed Beers Open. Here's a section, and much love and thank you for everyone who has emailed me. You guys kick ass and come out to my live shows. I love you.
Josh's house was near Turtle Pond, and he had only three neighbors. Going door to door accusing people of a crime is never fun.
Josh is a fucking idiot. I got plenty of wood. I don't take any fucking wood.
Next, you get the gingerbread house. The guy was one of Timothy Leary's LSD test subjects in the 60s.
Oh, well, you put your goggles on, and you just go across the top, and then I know how to estimate. Like, for every fish you see, you count 11. I went to college.
You can't stop counting fish.
And people said it was kind of a fishy major.
So it sounds like you're the type of guy that would steal Josh's wood.
Oh, I don't think I'd steal anything.
Have you been stealing Josh's wood?
I have not.
As a great man once said, I don't want to die. If I'm not back again this time tomorrow, carry on, carry on. Owen was walking into the den of a hungry lion, and that doorbell might as well have been a dinner bell.
How are you doing? Mind if I ask you a couple questions about your neighbor Josh's missing wood?
I'm going to be open, present, vulnerable, inviting. I'm excited to be here.
My name's Owen.
You look good. You look like how Owen should look.
Thanks, man. I was going to get a new shirt.
You got to twinkle, so you don't need clothing.
I would have just called, but no one has your phone number.
All these cops now, they're just tracking killers by their phones, by the ping.
So you go by several different names. People around town know you as Kirk, but I've heard Steve, Gary, Randolph. Someone thinks your name's Claire.
Isn't everything a little bit of a slant?
I mean, it is.
Everything's puppetry.
So it's no secret that you and your neighbor Josh have had issues in the past.
Everyone knew.
Josh says you broke into his yard once and filled his jacuzzi with cement.
The jacuzzi, no one has used it, probably in 3 or 4 years.
Josh liked the jacuzzi, and he used it a lot.
And there was a leak, so the water was kind of draining out. A pool guy was coming to fill it, clean it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy. The pool guy. No one's seen him in a while. Great guy. Wonder what happened to him.
And I started losing my mind, like, this guy is just fucking us.
But it was his jacuzzi.
It's useless. This jacuzzi is dead. You know, the deer come down, and it's a killer.
Yeah.
So I told the guy, listen, let's stop. Let's just stop playing these games. Let it drain out, knock out a hole in the bottom, and then I'll fill it with dirt, and then I'll cement the top. So it drained out, and this took about a year because I was lazy, but I'd throw things in it. And then one day, after about 3 shovelfuls of dirt, throwing it into the jacuzzi, I knew everything there was to know about shallow graves. I started getting a blister.
I hate blisters.
I know. We're in it.
Like this one right here. I got it from cracking beers.
And I understood that the commitment it takes to dig a deep hole.
Oh, dude.
Is the is the commitment that would have been needed to make that relationship work.
That should be a poster in a dentist's office.
I think we got to pull this tooth before it starts just pouring mercury.
I haven't been to the dentist since 9/11.
You don't need to. You got good, strong teeth.
I'm really glad we're having this conversation.
You can heal most of the world with one good deep breath.
You're so wise. Let me ask you something. Do you need a bunch of wood?
Well, burning is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of 5 or 6 miles off the coast. Cement. Let the fish eat it.
I guess that's it. I'm really glad I met you. You're a great dude.
Just gotta love, man. Just gotta love the world.
Thanks for all the advice.
Compassion training.
Years later, Owen would realize Kirk spared his life so he could be used as a character witness at one of his trials for killing 91 pool guys. When Kirk was 7, a pool boy pushed him in the pool and ruined his favorite pants. The same pool boy was also banging Kirk's mom.